The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. Yeah. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. Oh, once she grabs, she won't let go. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole.
None of that soft stuff.
Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole.
None of that heavy metal stuff.
Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole.
Just a little bit of jazz.
Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole.
What do you think?
Just I
like
love
that.
It. That was great.
All right. It is a Wednesday. Welcome to the middle of the week.
Big laughs out in the hall.
And laughs here, too. I am Nicole Sandler, coming to you live at NicoleSandler.com on the Progressive Voices Network, on YouTube, on, I believe, Twitter and Facebook Live as well. And, of course, and a bunch of other places, too. I know we're heard on Netroots Radio. We're heard on AirProgressive.org. We're heard on, see, I get in trouble when I start doing this because I don't have a nicely written list like Brad Friedman does for the broadcast that he runs down at the top of every show. Just, you know, a number of online stations carry the show. We are live at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 Pacific weekdays. And then everything is podcast afterwards. So it's all there, available when or where you want to listen. Yesterday was a fun, I thought, jaunt down memory lane with Andy Bichelbaum of the Yes Men. I was a huge Yes Men fan because I appreciate political activism, but I really appreciate it when it's done creatively, in a way that grabs your attention, that makes you laugh or makes you go, wow, how'd they pull that off? And that's what the Yes Men did. So I hope, you know, people share the information because the Yes Men have been kind of quiet. It was interesting to hear him say that they really went quiet during the 4 years that the former guy was occupying the Oval Office because, well, he didn't spell it out, but I think it's the same reasons that I suggested that nothing was funny then. You could do these hoaxes, but everything he did was a hoax. Nothing was real. And so when you're living in that weird suspended reality, it's hard to do this type of satire, and that's what it is. You see, it's hard because, for instance, I had no idea that over on the Fox Not News channel, they were going apeshit over this story that, frankly, is not really a story. It goes back to, you remember this? Hold on, I got to play this clip.
I hope they now go and take a look at the oranges of the investigation, the beginnings of that investigation.
The what?
About the Mueller report.
Yeah.
The Mueller report,
the what?
I wish covered the oranges.
The oranges.
How it started.
The oranges.
The beginnings of the
how it started. The beginnings.
How it started.
The oranges. Yeah, we got you, Orange Man. The oranges. Because I know the word origins is really hard to pronounce. But he passed his cognitive test with flying colors. Man, person, camera, TV. Something like that. Please. But see, here's where it gets complicated. Because apparently over on the Fox Not News channel, they're talking about this story about the oranges, of the Mueller investigation. Really? Because Trump's then Attorney General Bill Barr brought in this guy, John Durham, to investigate the so-called oranges of the Mueller investigation. And he turned up nothing. There's no there there. The origins of the investigation was simply the shit that was happening. The fact that Russia did try to meddle in the 2016 election. They did try to rig it for the Trump campaign. Whether or not it had any bearing on the outcome, I don't know. But, you know, it happened because there's a guy named Vladimir Putin who thinks he controls the world. And in some cases, he does. So, but apparently, on Friday, the Durham investigation released some documents that Fox has been claiming shows that Hillary Clinton infiltrated the Trump campaign and a whole bunch of stuff that is pure and simple
bullshit.
There's nothing real about it. It is factually
bullshit.
But that doesn't stop them because over at the Fox Not News channel, that's what they do.
Your original source for fake news. Fox News. We make shit up.
I've offered them that sounder. They've just ignored me. Go figure. I don't know. It's done very well, I think. And it's true. Maybe that's why they don't want to use it. So anyway, you know, I got a message in the wee hours this morning from listener Sue, who lives in Illinois. She is the pharmacist in a small rural hospital that has its own challenges. I don't know how she does it. But she asked, well, I should pull up her tweet because it said something to the effect of, do you have Marcy Wheeler coming on anytime soon? She said, here, Nicole Sandler, you having Empty Wheel on anytime soon? I listened to Jake Tapper yesterday report on the Durham investigation like it was legitimate. I'm starting to think either I'm going crazy or everyone else is. Now, I got to tell you, I was completely in the dark because I don't watch the Fox Not News channel. I physically cannot turn the television there. My husband watches it occasionally for laughs, but I don't think it's funny. It makes me angry because they live in opposite world. They make shit up and they call it news. And again, let me just say, they would not be able to do that over the local television airwaves. What we now call terrestrial broadcasting over the air, that's governed by the FCC. And the FCC has some really strict rules. You know, like you can go on Facebook and know that the advertising is bullshit. The people, they'll post ads on there telling, I mean, my favorite was this hair towel because, you know, I've got hair. And they were selling one of these little, you know, microfiber towels that I've got a couple of them. They're absorbent, but they advertise, and they even have video, that you put the thing, it's like a turban, on your head when your hair is wet. You rub it, I guess, for a few minutes, and then voila, like magic, you take the the towel off, and not only is your hair perfectly dry, it's perfectly styled, too. They can do that on Facebook. Now my hair is a mess. They can do that on Facebook because there is no FCC saying you can't have false advertising. There's no, apparently nobody guarding that hen house. But the airwaves, the broadcast airwaves, and I'm not talking cable, I'm not talking satellite, I'm talking going over the air. Well, the FCC is in charge of that, and they do have very strict rules against false advertising. And that's why when you see something advertised on television, you know, you still have to take it with a grain of salt, but you're better grounded in believing that the advertising has some semblance of reality rather than just, you know, made up bullshit, right? So the same goes for content. On over-the-air television, the Fox Not News Network could not call itself news because it isn't, because it's fiction, because they make shit up. So they can't call themselves news. They would not last a day on the airwaves, but they're on cable and there is no entity governing it saying you can't call that news. It's not news. You can't do it. Doesn't exist. So it's like it still is the Wild West. Now, in 1996, that was the last time there was any comprehensive legislation dealing with broadcast anything. It was the Telecommunications Act of 1996 that Bill Clinton signed into law destroying the industry that I worked in for most of my career, actually for all of my career. It opened the door for consolidation, and that's why, you know, you've heard me tell the story many times about the stations I worked at being sold and flipping to Spanish. That's what Bill Clinton did. But it didn't address any of this. However, it also included, at the same time, the beginnings of, screwing with the internet, because that's around when it was coming into being. And because it hadn't existed before, there were no regulations governing it. So they instituted what's known as the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, which is it's a clusterfuck. And here we are, what, like close to 30 years later, and it's never been updated. And I don't, you know, not that I would trust the makeup of Congress today to fix it, because our Congress is totally FUBAR. I don't know where the responsible adults are, frankly. So anyway, this story about the Durham investigation into the oranges of the Mueller investigation, the last I heard, you know, the last time they released any findings from it, there was no there. There was nothing there. They found nothing because there was nothing to find. But now they've fabricated a story. So Sue asked me, when is Marcy Wheeler coming back on? Because she listened to Jake Tapper yesterday report on it like it was legitimate. Well, Marcy Wheeler will be here Monday. I know Monday is President's Day. That's okay. We're working. I think most people are, unless you work in a bank or school. So I'll be here Monday. Marcy is still over in Ireland. So we will, we'll talk. You know, we're going to tape it early in the morning because she's got to get ready to monitor the trials that she monitors every day. Marcy Wheeler, who blogs at emptywheel.net, it's more than blog, she reports, and is on Twitter at Empty Wheel. Marcy Wheeler is on top of all this. She can fill us in on, January 6th insurrectionists have been before the judge, who's been sentenced, who hasn't, who's copping a plea, who's dealing, who's, you know, she's up to speed on all that because she calls into these hearings and listens. And with Durham, she's on top of that too. So much so that this surprised the hell out of me. I obviously didn't see it when it happened live because I don't tend to watch Morning Joe. Sorry. But who did they call on yesterday? But Marcy Wheeler. So I'm going to play for you just a couple of minutes of it so you can get the same kind of understanding that I have about where where this investigation has gone, because I frankly don't know what's going on with it. I don't know what they're reporting. So it's a good time to turn to Marcy Wheeler. So if I need to interrupt, I will. But I need to remove something from there. Not that one. I see. Okay, hold on. I need to clean up the picture. I'm sorry. I've got double logos, and that's really annoying. Let's see. That should do the trick. Okay, cool. All right. So here's Marcy Wheeler on, of all places, Morning Joe. Talk about a non sequitur, huh? Okay. Oh, here we go.
Wheeler. She's a former senior fellow at George Washington University.
Mika introduced her as an independent journalist, which she is.
Security, yeah. And perhaps she can shed some light on this. So-called scandal.
So, Ms. Wheeler, what's so fascinating about your work is you were extremely skeptical of the original story.
Yeah,
when it
for
came
good reason.
Out in 2016, and you were telling everybody at the time, this is bogus, this is nonsense, nothing to see here. So you've already hit that side. But now tell us about this Durham filing, because you've been quite critical of Durham.
Tell us, because I don't know what's going on.
Well, Tom mentioned a filing from Sussman overnight. And one of the things he revealed in that, which I've heard from other people, is this claim that Rodney Jaffe was accessing data from the White House. All of that data precedes Trump's inauguration. So you've got Trump out there calling for these people to be put to death, when really what happened is Rodney Jaffe was trying to keep Barack Obama safe from hackers. That's all it is. And that's why Trump wants these people killed. So, and Durham knows that. Durham knows that this data precedes Trump. He didn't include it in the filing. So he's got everyone all worked on Fox News. John Ratcliffe, you showed him earlier. Cash Patel is the source of many of these false claims. They were both witnesses to John Durham. And Cash Patel has known about this allegation going back to December 2017, because he's the one who first asked Michael Sussman about it. Michael Sussman was honest about it back in December 2017. And Cash Patel, when he was the Intelligence Committee staffer, when he was working in the White House, when he was the chief of staff for DOD, he did nothing about this because he knew that all that Rodney Jaffe was doing was trying to keep the White House safe from hackers. That's what this is about.
Huh.
John Heilman.
Listen, well, he calls her Mary.
Mary, like, where do you think, to the extent that you can kind of discern what the motivations are of some of these players, of Durham, for instance, and where does this go from here? In the aftermath of this pseudo scandal that we're seeing?
Well, the Durham investigation is in real trouble.
Good.
One of the things that one of the things that Sussman revealed overnight is that Durham didn't interview, like, one of the allegations in the indictment is that Sussman was coordinating with the Hillary campaign on these Alpha
Bank. This is what they're saying on Fox.
Back in October, Sussman was like, name the people. In October, Durham said, I don't have any people. In November, he first interviewed a Hillary staffer. He hadn't actually investigated.
Not till November.
This. We also learned recently that even though Durham and Bill Barr flew to Italy to get the phones from Joseph Mifsud, who remembers that Italian who was talking to George Papadopoulos,
okay,
he never walked across DOJ to get the phones from James Baker, who is the single witness to this conversation with Michael Sussman. He didn't find out that DOJIG had two of those phones until January. And then after he revealed that he had these phones that he should have looked for years ago, he then had to disclose that he had been told about one of these phones back in 2018, but he didn't remember it anymore. So what you've got, and those aren't the only things that Durham has had to admit that he didn't do before charging Michael Sussman. He didn't investigate how the FBI killed a story that the New York Times was going to come out with before the election, partly because of what Sussman did, which counters all of the motivation that Durham says he's working on. Durham didn't investigate that until after he had charged Sussman either. So Sussman on Friday probably is going to submit a motion to dismiss this entire indictment.
Oh.
And probably what last Friday's stunt was about for Durham was an attempt to preempt that, an attempt to pretend that this investigation isn't kind of post hoc, a discovery of things. For example, he didn't investigate what FBI's relationship is with Rodney Jaffe before he charged Michael Sussman. He only pulled those communications when Sussman said, why don't you go find out what kind of relationship the FBI really has with Jaffe? And he discovered there were thousands of communications. So Durham is very close to a position where Sussman is going to have the opportunity to say, you didn't do an investigation before you charged me. And a week before he probably is going to have to do that, this stunt comes out, and you have all these people who were witnesses who fed these conspiracy theories to Durham on the front end, who then go on Fox News and make false claims about it. And that's what this story is about.
That's what this story is about.
Garbage in, Cash Patel garbage out, and then Trump threatening to kill people as a result.
Wow.
It's that simple.
Wow. That just sums it up. Marcy Wheeler, thank you very much.
There you go. So Marcy Wheeler, again, explains it all. Now, if you're like me, half of that went over your head because I've not been following the story. You know why? Because there's no story there. This is all made up. This is all nonsense. This is all
bullshit.
It's just bullshit. And Marcy Wheeler cracked them up because she says it the way she says it. So we've got a full week here. So again, Marcy is going to join us on Monday. I didn't want to wait till Monday to address this. So there's the explanation. I'm guessing it's probably no clearer now than it was before I played the clip, unless you're like Marcy Wheeler and you follow all of this intently. I don't. To be really honest with you, and I think you know this by now, I've been backing off my news consumption as of late. I'm still covering it. I still do What's News every morning. So I wake up, I do the deep dive into everything. I'm subscribed to every newsletter out there. So when I get up in the morning, my inbox is full. And I go through it and I pull this story from that source and this story from that source and this story from that source. And I try to assemble it into an interesting 6 minute or longer news update that I record in the morning. It runs throughout the day on the Progressive Voices Network. The extended version, I have to cut it down to 6 minutes to fit on Progressive Voices. The extended version, Progressive Voices has in their direct download file, so you can get it from them. Or you can, if you subscribe to my show, you also get the extended What's News every morning as part of the podcast feed. It's not a separate podcast. It all goes under the same thing, and it's all free. Again, I work off of your donations. So the product is there, the newscasts and the show. So listen, share, whatever. Don't worry about a paywall. And please donate if you can. But anyway, I was thinking, all right, I need to then go into Fox and figure out what they're saying. And then I stopped myself. It's like, you know what? No, I don't. I am more informed than the average person. And maybe not as deep diving into every news story as I used to, because so much of it is just made up stuff. If it's coming from Fox or other right wing outlets, and you know what, when it's important that I know it, I'll get enough information and can share. But I'm certainly not going to go into that upside down opposite world of Fox to try to understand the lies that they're trying to push on the American public. Sad thing is, they're not just trying, they're succeeding. And this is really dangerous because they're pushing this false narrative. They're pushing a story that is fiction, but they have news splashed across their logo, and the people who rely on them for their information, that's where they get their news from, are getting fed a pack of lies. And that's why, look, I honestly don't blame most of the people that were caught up on January 6th, because they believe this. Their president is telling them the election was fixed. Well, no, it wasn't. He told you that before he knew, that he lost, because he knew he was going to lose. The thing that you don't know, because you watch Fox, is that in 2016, they were set up to do the same thing. They had all the Stop the Steal logos and slogans and attacks ready to go, because they were convinced they were going to lose. So they had this story all fabricated and ready to go about how the election was stolen from them, how they actually won by a landslide, which they didn't, because even in 2016, they lost the popular vote by 3 million votes. In 2020, it was over 7 million votes they lost by. But it doesn't matter. Facts don't matter to them. They continue to just pull out their playbook of lies. And now So they have media outlets who call themselves news, and they get away with it because there's no governing authority telling them that they can't. And these poor people out at all corners of this country believing it. I mean, and not just going along with a wink and a nudge. They believe it. They believe this is real news, and they don't understand why we're ignoring it. So it is a conundrum. It's really frustrating. And it's gotten worse and worse now, to the point where, you know, I look at the ratings, such as they are, and I sites like Mediaite take delight in telling us that primetime Fox is beating all the other news outlets combined. in every day part and every demographic. Well, you know what? That's not something to celebrate. That's something to be terrified of. Because propaganda is what encourages the downfalls of empires. And make no mistake, this is an empire. And maybe it does need to be broken up, but not in the way they want to break it up. So, you know, we're fucked and not in a good way. So, all right. So that whole thing about me sort of stepping back from some of the news is not that I don't want to be informed, but I kind of feel like I've got to pick and choose what stories to pay attention to. Now, the other unintended side effect of all of this is another thing we're seeing in the polling, this massive distrust of the Fourth Estate. Fourth Estate, that's journalism. I believe, and I am not a journalist. I didn't study journalism. I studied broadcasting in school. Remember, I spent the first 20 years or more of my career doing music radio. Well, I did some talk show producing in there as well. So I've always had a foot in the news world, but, you know, I was more in the entertainment part of it. I'm not a journalist. I'm a talk show host who does a show based in fact, so that if I get anything wrong, I welcome your corrections. I want to get it right. I don't want to give you fake information. I remember when fake news was what Jon Stewart did on the Daily News, and it was funny. But that orange guy twisted everything to suit his own purposes. So anyway, coming up in just a couple of minutes is David Dayen. David Dayen is always one of my favorite guests because he is packed full of information. And I know that when I listen to David Dayen, whether I'm reading a piece of his over at The American Prospect, which you can access at prospect.org, again, there's no paywall there, for which I give them great thanks. They will always put up a pop-up and ask you to sign up and register and to subscribe to the magazine, which, by the way, is tax-deductible. But they're not going to stop you from reading the articles if you're not a paying subscriber, because it's more important to get the news out. So hopefully the people who can afford it will pay for good quality journalism, as hopefully those who enjoy this show will pay for good quality commentary. And we see somebody calling. All right, we only got a couple of minutes before David Dayen comes in, but hi, who's this?
Yeah, hi, this is Vince.
Vince.
I'm in Nevada.
Okay, hey, Vince. What's up?
Yeah, I just wanted to tell Nicole, since she brought up Fox.
This is Nicole. I'm Nicole. When you call here, you get me. It's me. What's up, Vince?
Oh, hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to talk about, you called it Fox No News.
Not news. It's not news.
Yeah, I think Lawrence O'Donnell has the best name for it. He calls it the Fox Propaganda Network.
That's what it is. Yeah, that works.
Yeah.
That works. Yeah. I can't say the words Fox followed by the word news as if they go together. It's like, you know, the two magnets that repel each other. Because Fox is not news. It's bullshit. It's fake news.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Love your show. Listen to you every day.
Awesome. Thank you, Vince.
All right. Take care of yourself.
You too. Bye-bye. Well, I love calls like that. Thank you, Vince. Made my day. All right. So anyway, where was I? Oh, so I know when David Dayen comes on, I don't have to parse what he says. See, I have trusted news sources. I trust David Dayen. I trust Marcy Wheeler. These are people who have both been doing this work for many years for a number of different outlets, but both of them have always retained this this air of independence. They've both written for the biggest news organizations in the world, but they each, well, David Dayen, for many years, he did the news for Fire Dog Lake, which was one of the early OG political blogs, and he just was on every story. He was the guy who covered everything. And then he just freelanced for a number of years. So you would see him in The Nation, in Mother Jones, in the New York Times, in the Washington Post, wherever, Rolling Stone, American Prospect. And now he's the executive editor of the American Prospect and has only made that publication, which has always been really good, even better. I mean, if that's, it should be one of your first stops in the morning. Again, no paywall. And again, they're not constrained by commercial endeavors. You know, often you wonder, you can't help but wonder when you watch, for instance, MSNBC, how much sway the advertisers have. Well, first of all, NBC is now owned by Comcast, and it's all about the money. But a site like the American Prospect, I don't think they take advertising. They may have some, but it doesn't infiltrate their work. Emptywheel.net, where Marcy Wheeler writes her reporting. I hesitate to call it a blog because it's not really a blog. It's an outdated name for the website where she posts her work. She doesn't have ads on there. She is reader funded. And maybe that's the way we're going. That's how you know you can trust someone because, well, one, the quality of their reporting, but two, the fact that they don't take advertising dollars. So you don't have to worry or wonder if they're being influenced from the outside. Anyway, so at the Prospect, at the American Prospect, this month, they have a special issue. The issue is all about the supply chain. And again, I'm going, okay, I know about the supply chain because it's in the news, but it's one of those things that we hear what it's called, and we're, you know, maybe we don't exactly know what it means. So you want to go to a trusted source. And again, this is where the American Prospect and David Dayen come in, because you know you can trust them. You know you're getting good information. And now they have a full issue out dealing with just this subject, because we're all going, what the hell's going on, right? So enter David Dayen. Welcome back to the show, David. Good to see you. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's always my pleasure. I try not to ask you too often because I don't want you to take advantage of your goodwill and the great work you do. But this time I saw this issue and I thought, all right, this is a great way to get an understanding of what the hell is going on. You know, the supply chain, we're hearing this is the reason for the inflation and the mess we're in now. But I guess I'm going to come at this from a place of naivete, I suppose. Isn't the supply chain issue affecting the whole planet? And isn't inflation pretty much affecting the whole planet right now?
Well, it is. I mean, we saw, I think just today, prices in the UK at a 30-year high.
Wow.
Prices in Europe are at decade-long highs. It's a global system, right? Stuff that is made, whether it's in Asia or in Europe, goes all around the world. So it is a global system. And, you know, we have a global supply chain. It is to some degree uniquely worse in the United States because of our devotion to deregulation. That is certainly true in our trucking industry. That is certainly true in our rail industry. That increases prices more. We also took to the whole concept of just-in-time logistics, which basically says you don't need any inventories. We will get the thing from China, get it onto the store shelf, and get it out the door for sale immediately. It's a waste of money to have warehouse space. That's essentially the point of just-in-time logistics. And as a result, we have a catastrophic lack of warehouse space in the United States. So transportation and warehouse prices are uniquely higher here than in other parts of the world. And so while this is a global problem and most countries are experiencing inflation because of supply chain issues, it's worse here.
I see. All right. Well, then that makes sense. I get it. Plus, we are also the gluttons of the world, right? We use more. Sure. We use more stuff. We use more energy. We're the main source of most of the pollution because we use most of the energy. I mean, we're the consumers of the world here.
And the other issue is that because even though we have this tremendous amount of imports, where we rely on China and Vietnam to get our goods, our our infrastructure to actually acquire those goods and transport them across the country is rather bad. One of the stories we did for this special issue was about ports. There's a World Bank ranking of the top 500 ports in the country, in the world. And U.S. ports, like particularly the key port at Los Angeles and Long Beach, where 40% of all seaborne imports come in, is in the 300s out of 500. So we have a uniquely bad structure to ship all these goods while at the same time being, you know, this gluttonous country that survives on the backs of a lot of imports.
Sure. So, you know, we take in more than everyone else. But the reason I brought that up to start with is because when you listen to some of the media pundits, I'm trying not to refer to them as news because in many cases they're not, they talk about it as if this is a uniquely American thing and it's all Joe Biden's fault.
Well, I mean, there are uniquely American parts to it, but it's because of the bipartisan decision over 40 years to privatize our supply chains, to not invest in them, and to allow corporations to basically dictate them. That's the uniquely American part of this, not anything Joe Biden did, not the increased spending from the federal government. There is an argument to make that we had a shift, right? You don't go to the bar anymore. You don't go to restaurants as much anymore, and you spend more money on goods rather than services. And so what we've seen is an increase in goods imports and services, consumer consumption of services is rather flat or down. So yeah, that means that we have more goods coming into the country that we need to get around the country. However, that's been the case since 2020. Uh-huh. And the fact that we've had 2 years to adjust to this reality and haven't been able to do it suggests that there's a serious problem with the engineering of our supply chains.
And does that have to do with the gridlock in our government, the fact that nothing is going to get done because we're so polarized and divided?
Well, it has to do with a number of things. And the biggest is the policy choices that we made going back for the last 50 years. So it's not about gridlock now. It's about the bipartisan decisions 30, 40, 50 years ago that put us in this mess. And those decisions include mass outsourcing, bringing China into the WTO, for example, signing things like NAFTA and the permanent trade relations with China. So outsourcing is a big part of this that puts a lot of pressure on supply chains because our goods are coming from halfway around the world. Mm-hmm. Then things like the Ocean Shipping Reform Act of 1998, which I'm sure you know very well.
Oh, yeah, Nicole. Right.
The Ocean Shipping Reform Act was actually really important because it eliminated the transparency in pricing from ocean shipping companies. And what we've seen is a tenfold increase during this crisis of shipping rates on the spot market. Ocean shipping companies, and they're kind of structured in three alliances, so there's not a lot of choice there. Ocean shipping companies made more in the year 2021 than they did in the years 2010 to 2020 combined.
How did I know you were going to say that? You see, that this is all, I'll go back to the pandemic, and I could be totally wrong on this, but it appears to me this is the shock doctrine in action. This is, we suffered this global shock to our system, a global pandemic, and as Naomi Klein told us in that book, when there is such a shock to any system, the predators basically come in and say, we're going to take advantage of it. We're going to reform everything so we do better as we move forward and get past this emergency. Well, the price gougers are out. So we keep hearing inflation is rising. The cost of everything is going up. Well, part of that, or the part they're not really saying at the same time, excuse me, is that companies, corporations are making record profits more than ever before. And it sounds to me like not only are they taking the increases and passing those on to the consumer, but then they're adding some on top of it because why not?
There's no question. And let me just say something about this that has popped up in the last 24, 48 hours, and I'm going to do some more reporting on it.
Okay.
If you put on Instagram that inflation is because of corporate price gouging and here's all these profit increases, they're apparently slapping misinformation labels onto those posts. And that's true in Facebook and that's true at Instagram. And this is absolutely outrageous. This is in large part why, you know, the concept of calling things misinformation ends up being negative in the end, because now they're judging just differences of opinion as misinformation and warning people against something in a way that protects the status quo. It is a complete outrage, and I'm surprised that more members of Congress, that more activists have not been speaking out about this, because it's disgusting of a group, a company like Facebook, to try to, you know, carry water for their corporate buddies by putting that outside the bounds of legitimate discourse.
Right. I would think some real journalists would have jumped all over this, because I'll tell you something. This is something that has bugged me for a long time. This is a total aside, but I got to share this with you. It's only going to take a couple of seconds. So we watch Shark Tank, right? Shark Tank, where people come in and who created a product and they pitch it to the sharks. Well, the thing that bugs me about that show is when they get to what does it cost you to make and what are you selling it for? So I just pulled a couple of those examples, and this is just very unscientific, just the first three I could find or so. And listen to this.
It costs $6.
$6?
And what
okay.
do you sell it for?
$26.99.
And how much do you have?
So sharks, what do you say you jump in with a fellow sea creature like me and make a huge splash in the boring mount industry?
I like it. I really, really like it.
Thank you.
How much do you sell it for, and how much does it cost you to make?
Sell it for $45. Cost
wow.
me $6.
Wow.
Yeah, we're selling it at $45. We've tried different
cost
price points,
$6.
But cost me $6.08 currently.
$6.
Whoa.
$8.
With that version.
They sell it for $45.
Wow. Okay, but wait. How many of you sold?
Well, over 40,000 units to date.
Duh!
40,000 units? And they celebrate it. Wait, there's
How
one more.
How much does it cost you to make them?
Landed cost right now is $2.60 for the Snactive, and then $2.82 for the Snactive with case. Landed.
Okay, $2.60, their price is $15 per.
Right.
There comes a point where...
I mean, there are other costs, like beyond the cost of production, right?
But this is landed. This is landed. This is their cost for goods and services. So, you know, I remember back when I was a kid in school and economics classes, and believe me, my eyes roll back in my head when I talk economics, but it was always, you know, wholesale is a 50% markup, so you make double.
Right.
They're talking in multiples of from 7 to 20. And the reaction is not like, maybe you could bring the price down a little bit so people could afford this. It's, yeah, baby, yeah. The more they gouge you for, the more excited these sharks get. And that,
well,
I think,
here's
is
the question.
A problem.
I mean, what are the forces that bring prices down? One is low demand. I don't think we necessarily want low demand in our economy. That's not good for anybody. But the other one is more competition, right? If you have five companies that are selling you an Oreo rather than one company, then those companies have to compete on price and quality and the consumer benefits. We have an economy right now where there isn't a lot of competition. Mm-hmm. And a lot of companies have what they call very euphemistically in their earnings calls, pricing power. And what that means is they have the power, because it's a necessity or something that people really want. They can price it whatever they want, and people will come running for it. So this is part of the policy choices that we made that essentially broke this system of commerce. We have outsourcing. We have monopolization. We have just-in-time logistics that I mentioned before, so we have very thin inventories. We have deregulation, like of trucking, like of rail, like of shipping. We have financialization, which means Wall Street dictates what the price is going to be, what kind of labor you get. They're running the show, essentially. Mm-hmm. So all of these things come together, and they build this system of commerce for it. And it works totally fine until it doesn't. Because what you do when you create these long supply chains, and there's only a couple companies that are able to get the goods distributed through the system, mm-hmm. what is the effect of all that? It means that when something goes wrong, that there's no slack in the system. There's no reserve capacity in the system. There's no way to adjust for increased demand or right. for a shutdown at a port or anything like that. And by the way, the pandemic, which brought this out, is really just a dry run for climate change.
Oh,
because
sure.
If a port goes down because of extreme weather, if a factory has to close because there's a deep freeze, all of this is going to happen again repeatedly over and over and over.
And we saw it. We saw it. When the pandemic started, we saw this in real time. That
absolutely.
They ran out of stuff and you couldn't buy anything for a while.
And, you know, the big book of capitalism tells me that you're not supposed to ever have shortages, that if there's demand, supply will rise to meet demand. Well, we created a system where that's not actually true. Because we privatized this whole system and gave it away to Wall Street. And that is ultimately the problem. We introduced risk into our system of commerce and it exploded in the pandemic. And now we're paying the price with shortages and we're paying the price literally with inflation, with higher prices. And the only way to fix this is to reverse those policy choices that I described before. We need to re-regulate all of these systems. Yeah. We need to insource or near-source manufacturing so that we're not so reliant on these long supply chains. We need to break up companies and deal with the monopoly problem so that we introduce more competition into our commerce. We need to break Wall Street's stranglehold on this country, and we need to turn just in time into just in case so that we have some reserves in case something goes wrong. That's what we need to do.
Well, maybe also start manufacturing things here again.
Well, that's part of it.
Right.
Yeah,
but I mean, I remember one of the first times I ever interviewed Bernie Sanders was probably a dozen years ago or so. And he's, Nicole, do you know how many factories have closed in the United States in the last decade? Like, I don't know, 5,000, 50,000. I mean, that was his thing. And it's just gotten worse. We don't make anything here, relatively speaking. So that's a big problem as well. Anything has to come from out of the country, from China or other Asian right. nations or wherever.
And here's what's interesting is that when you look at China, and we wrote about this in our supply chain issue, which, by the way, you can read every piece in our issue, which goes over everything I talked about in much, much more detail at prospect.org/supply chain.
That's right. Supply. Supply dash chain.
You can
work
get to
either
it
way?
Either way.
Oh, gotcha.
You can get to it either way.
Okay.
So prospect.org/supply chain. What we learned in the China piece is that even though the argument is, yes, well, there was a pandemic and that created all these problems, the majority of the problems created over the last year in China were actually from extreme weather. The Yangtze River flooded and it shut down a bunch of ports and manufacturing facilities and things like that. Then they had an extreme heat scenario late summer, that led to shutdowns of electricity, which shuttered factories and which caused problems throughout the supply chain. In other words, it's not just the pandemic that can cause something like this. You can have political unrest. Look at the Freedom Convoy up there. You can have a freak accident. One of the reasons why car prices have gone up so much is because of semiconductor production. We
right.
have shortages in semiconductors. One of the big reasons for that is that there was a fire at a plant in Japan right near the beginning of the pandemic, which knocked out production. And there was another fire more recently in Berlin, which is a fire of the factory that builds the machines that make the semiconductors.
Oh, my
right?
God.
So anything can trigger this. Anything is a potential risky event when you have a supply chain that's so reliant on concentrated production, concentrated shipping and distribution lines, and the need to get things now just in time.
Right. And then there's, I guess, the cover up, which happens anytime that something doesn't go the way it's supposed to. I think I heard you talk about, for instance, the port of Los Angeles. We keep hearing about the backlog in the ships that are there waiting to come into the port. What we don't know is that there are more just outside of the zone that right. What is going on? What is this about? Can you explain?
This was something that they did right near the when there were about 80 ships off the coast of LA and Long Beach. And the Pacific Marine Exchange, which is a kind of a private company that handles traffic at the on the West Coast, said, well, why don't you guys move from 50 miles offshore to 150 miles? And what they said was, and this is not necessarily untrue, is that the exhaust and the pollution would not reach the shore if you were further offshore.
Okay.
Also, you'd be further away from one another, so you wouldn't bump into each other or whatever.
Okay.
So, but this started getting reported as, oh, the number of ships off the coast of LA and Long Beach was cut in half.
Right.
Well, no, it wasn't. They just moved further offshore, and in fact, there's more of them than ever.
They're there just
right now.
Further
the number,
away.
I believe the number peaked at about 108. So, yeah, this is a serious, serious problem. There were indications like in January where they were pulling Halloween costumes off these ships in January.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's inventory that now you just got to toss or wait till next year on. So it's a significant problem. And the thing about that, and Alex Salmon wrote a great piece for us about this, we knew this was going to be a problem. In 2015, the federal regulator that oversees ports, which is called the Federal Maritime Commission, wrote a report that said, if we get a little bit more demand in imports, we're going to be overwhelmed mm-hmm. at our ports. And he and the report says everything that has actually happened right now is going to happen. You're going to get a backup of ships. You're going to get a big long line of trucks that isn't going to be able to maneuver. You're going to have more containers that you know what to do with. You're going to have shortages of key equipment that you need to get things and move things around. You're not going to have enough space to fill containers and move things back and forth. All of that happened, and we knew about it in 2015.
Yep. In fact, you mentioned Alex Sam. The piece that he wrote, the title is We Were Warned About the Ports. A 2015 federal report predicted the entire slowdown that's come to pass. So
right.
This was in the works. The pandemic maybe pushed it along a little faster, but it would yes. have happened regardless. And as you said, these will continue to happen with climate disruptions. And in fact, the climate disruptions are already part of the mess that we're experiencing now. It's just yeah. easier to blame the pandemic because it's there.
Well, and it's even easier to blame Joe Biden's fiscal spending and the American Rescue Plan and claim that this is just a matter of overheating in the economy, quote unquote. And then the answer to that is that you get the Federal Reserve to cool down the economy. And what that sounds nice, like, oh, I like to be cooled down. I don't like it hot. But what does that mean? That
raise means interest rates.
Raising interest rates, throwing people out of work, reducing investment, right at a time when we need to invest in our manufacturing.
Dare I pull out the word austerity?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's monetary austerity. It's
sure.
different than fiscal austerity. But the point is that this is such a non-solution to this problem. The problem is the very design of our supply chains. They're trying to throw people out of work to reduce demand so that we can get ships out from off the coast of LA and Long Beach so that the goods could be then offloaded and have no customers, right? I mean,
oh
like,
God.
Think about it. It's madness. And we need to reckon with the fact that this was a problem that was a long time coming. We disinvested in our supply chains and we allowed oligarchs to take control of them. And we need to take the control back.
Very well said, David Day. And as it is throughout this whole issue, by the way, let me just bring it up again. It's how we broke the supply chain. And if you go, as David just said, to prospect.org/supply chain, you come up with a page that is this special issue online. You can get a hard copy of this because American Prospect still publishes as an actual magazine that if you are a subscriber at a certain level, you will get automatically sent to your mailbox. But it's all here online. And I mentioned earlier, because I operate the same way, you're not behind a paywall. And that's, I think it's so great because the information is so important. So it's there. If you can afford to get a subscription to support good work at the Prospect, as I ask you to do here on this show, please do. But share the information.
That would be at prospect.org/membership.
Oh, right.
And the reason that we put out this issue is that we thought there was a story that was not being told.
A few.
About, a lot of stories about how neoliberal policy really created all these harms. And so, the issue is there to be shared. It's there to spread this idea, this set of ideas, so that the conversation isn't, do we throw people out of work or not, right? The conversation isn't, is inflation just a one-off because of the pandemic and then everything will be better? Or is it because of all this fiscal spending and giving money to people and we got to cut that out right away?
Right.
So
just know the last part, that's not it. And again, I feel like we're always pushing back on this stuff. It's like every few years when the gas prices go up, as they did now, and you've got the party that's not in power blaming the party that is. Well, you know what? Yeah. The president really has nothing to do with the price of gas. It's going to rise and fall regardless of what he or she does.
And in fact, we have a piece at the end of this issue by our writing fellow Lee Harris that talks about what is the reason why energy prices have gone up so much. And it's a concerted strategy on the path of domestic fracking companies to keep the spigots off, so that they can increase their own prices by deliberately reducing supply. And, there are arguments for and against that. We don't really want a lot of oil fracked out of the ground necessarily. But the point is that this is an example of how commodity producers, how retailers, they can dictate prices. They can control prices. They can make sure that things are done in their own interests. And we're seeing that with oil right now.
Wow. The other part of it is, again, in this country, because we are so divided and it's all politics at the moment and it's so ugly, but you have a Joe Manchin saying, well, we can't do that because the prices have gone up so much. So Build Back Better is dead. Well, that's the wrong answer. And he's echoing those right-wing talking points that are not based in any reality, except maybe what he's hearing on Fox.
Especially because Build Back Better, at least as it was originally constructed, is an inflation-fighting bill. It takes the biggest drivers of cost of living historically, not now, by the way, but historically, healthcare, housing, and education, and it tries to lower those costs for the American people. So in a way that really would bring down prices. But I mean, I think this is a moot point at this point. Manchin has his story and he's sticking to it. I think what we have to do is tackle inflation in a way that brings back some sanity, frankly, to the way that we do commerce in the United States. The series of articles outlines what happened and how we can fix it.
It's a starting point. I don't know if there's any plans to do so, but it would be a good thing to send every member of Congress a copy of the magazine.
Right, way ahead of you.
Awesome. I love it. I'm glad to hear it. I should not ever underestimate you. David Dayan, he is the executive editor of the American Prospect. You find them at prospect.org, and that should be among your favorites. It should be on your toolbar of your browser to check every morning, seriously, because you guys are doing some of the best reporting out there. David Dayan, I've been a fan of yours for years, and I so appreciate the work you do, and I thank you for your time and joining us today. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right. We'll talk soon. Take care. Bye-bye. David Dayan, again, prospect.org/supply chain. There's so much great information here. And look, I said he should send it to everybody in Congress. He said, we're way ahead of you. Great minds think alike, you know? All right. With that, we're pretty much done for today. See, even when I don't know the answers, I know what questions to ask, or I try anyway. All right, tomorrow, Howie Klein is here. Friday, we'll end the week with Digby. So we got a bunch of things to look forward to. Thank you all for being here. Thank you for wanting to be informed and for paying no attention to the man behind the curtain and the bullshit they try to pass off as news. We need to push back on that. We need to continue pushing back on that. All right. Thank you for listening, everybody. I'll see you tomorrow. And I'll actually leave you with the news in my style. I call it What's News. I'll see you tomorrow. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
President Biden on Tuesday made a speech with a plea for diplomacy, saying the United States and its allies would, quote, give the diplomacy every chance to de-escalate the crisis without bowing to Russian demands that include barring Ukraine from one day joining NATO. But Biden added that Russia might still invade Ukraine despite their unverified claim that it had pulled back some of its estimated 150,000 troops from the border. Biden warned that Russia should expect, quote, overwhelming international condemnation and other repercussions if they proceed. He also said that he will help, quote, defend every inch of NATO territory with a full force of American power to help mitigate the effects of the crisis that would be felt across the U.S. Experts say an invasion of Ukraine would destabilize world energy markets, resulting in higher prices at the gas pumps. Stay tuned. For the very first time, a gun maker has been held liable for a U.S. mass shooting. The Sandy Hook families on Tuesday announced a $73 million settlement with gunmaker Remington. The Sandy Hook families sued the company for how it marketed its Bushmaster AR-15-style semi-automatic rifle. The Sandy Hook shooter was armed with that rifle during his rampage in Newtown, Connecticut, that killed 28 people, including 20 young first-grade children. Remington, which has filed for bankruptcy, had offered to pay nearly $33 million to the nine families last July. The final settlement reported to be $73 million. Well, Tuesday must have been settlement day, as Prince Andrew is now also paying up. Andrew was sued in August by Virginia Giuffre, who said she was recruited by Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell when she was a teenager in Palm Beach, Florida. Giuffre, now a mother living in Australia, alleged that she had unwanted sexual encounters with Andrew in New York, London, and on Epstein's private island in the Caribbean in the early 2000s. A one-page settlement statement was filed in U.S. District Court in Manhattan on Tuesday. The settlement comes shortly after a federal judge in New York sought help from the courts in the UK and Australia to secure the testimony of witnesses living in those countries. A notice filed to the same judge on Tuesday said that in light of the settlement, Giuffre would be withdrawing her civil claims against Andrew. Her attorney, David Boyce, said in a statement, the amount is confidential, but he added that the settlement, quote, speaks for itself. But that's not all. A federal court jury in New York has rejected the former Alaska governor Sarah Palin's libel suit against the New York Times, concluding that the paper is not legally liable for a 2017 editorial that she claimed unfairly linked her to a mass shooting 6 years earlier. The nine-person jury's unanimous verdict came just one day after the judge handling the case, Jed Rakoff, threw out the lawsuit because he said Palin had failed in his judgment to demonstrate actual malice on the part of the Times or its former editorial page editor, James Bennett. Rakoff's announcement of his ruling in the middle of the jury's deliberations prompted some criticism from some legal experts, but the judge said that he remained confident that the jurors had not learned of his decision, and then they came to the same conclusion that he did. And now, a new lawsuit. The family of the cinematographer who died on the set of Alec Baldwin's movie Rust has filed a wrongful death suit against Baldwin, the film's production companies, its producers, and other key members of the crew. Helena Hutchins was fatally shot last October during a rehearsal for a scene for the film. The family's lawsuit alleges that Baldwin and others charged with safety on the set violated numerous industry standards, claiming the production companies and producers cut corners and chose to hire the cheapest crew available. specifically alleging that they, quote, knowingly hired a wholly unqualified armorer. Baldwin's team told CNN they had no comment on the filing. Now on to the former guy's current legal problems. President Biden has ordered the Trump White House visitor logs to be turned over to the January 6th committee. The former guy had claimed the logs were subject to executive privilege. But in a letter on Tuesday, a White House lawyer rejected that claim, saying the National Archives should provide the records within 15 days to the House committee investigating the attack on the Capitol. And New York's Attorney General, Letitia James, will go to court Thursday seeking to enforce a subpoena for Donald Trump's testimony in a civil probe that she says uncovered evidence that his company used fraudulent or misleading accounting to get loans and tax breaks. The decision could force Trump and his adult children to testify under oath. In other news, COVID-19 cases and hospitalizations are finally declining across the country, but more than 2,000 Americans are still dying every day from the virus. The U.S. is now averaging over 151,000 new COVID-19 cases each day. That's a big difference from the peak of more than 800,000 cases per day just a month ago. But vaccinations across the country are also slowing down. About 64% of Americans are fully vaccinated, but only 28% have received a booster dose. Meanwhile, in Canada, some of the blockades at border crossings over vaccine mandates are finally ending. But protests remain ongoing in downtown Ottawa. Well, this is frightening and a chilly sign of what's likely to come. Early voting has begun in Texas. Election officials in Harris County are sounding the alarm that they've had to reject nearly 38% of all mail-in ballots because of ID requirements created by the state's new Republican-authored voter suppression laws. And finally, if you've gotten a whiff of some news story brewing over at the Fox Not News channel, here's the deal. They've been loudly lying about John Durham, that's the special counsel appointed by then Attorney General Bill Barr, falsely claiming that the Clinton campaign infiltrated Trump's White House servers to spy on him. That is simply not true. It's a lie. But I guess it is a convenient distraction from stories like Trump destroys classified documents and Trump's accounting firm fires him over huge fraud schemes. You get the idea. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is fully listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com and please click on that donate button.